Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're all very, very welcome back. Well, you would probably have to be living on another planet not to know about the movie Up on Hire. Its lead actor, Cillian Murphy, is already generating Oscar buzz for his performance as the title character in director Christopher Nolan's new film of the name. But who was J. Robert Oppenheimer, the man that Cillian Murphy is playing? Kevin Nolan, physics lecturer at TUI Dublin, fill us in on who was this very, very enigmatic man?
Yeah, well, actually, where do you start? Because the word enigmatic probably is the best word. I mean, let's start off by saying that he was an absolutely brilliant physicist. He was one of the greatest physicists who ever lived. So some people might perceive that maybe he was the organizer, the coordinator of course, the Manhattan Project, which developed the first atomic bomb. But prior to that, he had done seminal and foundational work in the understanding of what's called quantum mechanics and the understanding of the atom. He knew everybody in the field. He had finished his PhD in Germany only a decade or so before, and he was doing extraordinary work in the University College of Berkeley. To set a little bit, I suppose, in context.
Maybe tell us a little bit about his early life. Were there kind of any early indicators of this genius?
Yeah, and I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know what way they're portraying it.
But I've got to hold back.
But what I will say is that, let's be clear, it's known, and maybe he's portrayed that there's kind of conflict there within the person, contradictions. Mm. And they were kind of there in a sense. Now, he wasn't a lost soul, from what I understand. He was a brilliant genius from a very young age, multiple languages, into mineralogy at the age of 12 and all of that. Came from a wealthy family in New York. His parents were immigrant Jews from Prussia. He lived in a very opulent life. They had a great art collection with Picasso's and all the rest of it in it. So he came from a good background.
He originally studied chemistry, not physics.
He did. Well, at that stage, chemistry and physics were very tied at the hip, because every new discovery in physics had direct consequences in our understanding of the atom and molecules. But you're absolutely right, in as much as even he did a degree in chemistry, he went to Cambridge, he wasn't happy there, and then he went over to Germany and he finished his PhD, and when he found theoretical physics around 1927, that was it. He discovered himself, and he was diabolical at lab work, actually, which is interesting that he actually then supervised ultimately a massive laboratory complex.
Because what's really interesting about it, is to consider where the science was at the point when he took on the job of developing the bomb, because no one person invented it. The atom, I think, had already been split. But he was this person who brought it all together. First of all, what was he asked to do?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. And let's be clear, this was an extraordinary time. A bit maybe like with us with social media and AI and all the rest of it. They were discovering the nature of the atom and all the applications that, by the way, were just not the atomic bomb, but would lead to the invention of the transistor and then the computer and semiconductors and all that. So they were discovering a new aspect of nature. And basically, all of the scientists involved were equally committed and equally involved in that. So he
understood, highly competitive.
Well, and you've hit the nail on the head. If people think sport is competitive, and this would have been part of the reason why he would have accepted the position for Las Almas, is that science was extraordinarily competitive to get funding, to get papers published, to make the first discoveries. He was part and parcel of that. He would have known that world. Every one of the scientists he would have worked with would have been part of that. So the atom had only been fully understood 7 years before they were then starting to tell about.
So what was the call, and what was it he was asked to do, and what was the Manhattan Project?
So the Manhattan Project then, basically Einstein wrote to Roosevelt in 1939 to warn Roosevelt that maybe Germany might be building an atomic bomb. Just prior to that, by the way, a lady called Lise Mittner, who didn't get the credit for this, discovered nuclear fission. In December 1938, if you split the uranium atom, you'll get loads of amount of energy. She didn't get the Nobel Prize for it.
They rarely do.
Are we surprised? Niels Bohr, Einstein's friend, communicated that to America, and then Einstein wrote to Roosevelt, it took 3 years for America to kind of feel, you know what, maybe a bomb can be made. Then they called in Oppenheimer, really. He was so brilliant and had such a grasp of all the science to actually do the initial physics calculations just as an academic. And then General Leslie Groves recognised from the military end of it his absolute brilliance.
Matt Damon, I think.
That's right. But also his pragmatism, his sense of loyalty, his sense of duty. As we know, it comes back to this search in life. You know, he was reading Hindu scripture, and he was.
I am death, the destroyer of worlds.
Yes, but also part of that scripture was this notion of, sense of duty, sense of don't let the consequences of something deter you from action.
So essentially, in case Germany develops this, we must. And he took the job sort of out of sense of, it was a secret project. They built literally a village or a town in the middle of the desert in order to do this.
Manhattan then, so to bring it onto that, was 300,000 or 150,000 people. This is as big as Apollo, nearly $24 billion in today's terms. Secret project. And he then was asked...
How do you keep it secret if there's 150,000 people?
Apparently 5,000 people were working actually in Manhattan on it, but it was an open secret that this was going on. But however, he managed then a lab in Las Almas in New Mexico where they would ultimately do the testing of. And when you find out about him, what was extraordinary was he started off with 300 scientists. Within a couple of years, it was 6,000 scientists. And apparently he managed it brilliantly. He was on the floor, sleeves rolled up, working with the scientists, understood the metallurgy, the engineering, and actually was inspiring everybody to do this.
And they did the test. I think it was called the Trinity test, where they tested the atomic bomb.
That's it. Yeah. And that bomb then, of course, utterly convinced them that this could be done. That was a 21 kiloton. That's an atomic bomb with the same power as 21,000 tons of dynamite. Now, to give you a sense of the power of this, kilogram for kilogram, an atomic bomb is about a million times more powerful than the best conventional bombs you can explode. And that was in July of 1945. And then only in the next month, on August the 6th and August the 9th, they detonated, Little Boy over Hagasaki and Fat Man over
Little
Hagasaki.
Boy was the first one, the first bomb, indeed, which was on August the 6th. And that was called Little Boy.
Yes.
Killed about 80,000 people, if not more. Days later, it was the year later, 1946, where a Fat Man bomb was dropped in Nagasaki.
Well, actually, no, just 3 days later.
3 days later, of course, August 9th. Yeah. But his moral compass in terms of being saluted for bringing this in and getting ahead of the Germans, but even in that short period of time, he started to become conflicted about it, the potential of the thing he'd created.
Yep. Indeed, by August the 17th, he had written a handwritten letter to Truman expressing his regret and revulsion for what they've done. He asked to see Truman in October of that year, and they met, and that's when he said his famous, "I've got blood on my hands." And Truman was so incensed by this, because if he's saying he's got blood on his hands, they all have blood on their hands.
Truman was actually saying, "Forget about you. I was the one who made the call.
He did.
I'm the one." And nearly, and in the movie, it's sort of deployed as taking sort of pride in that. But can you think of it like, I mean, all of those scientists, all of those calculations, and how difficult it must have been for them? But obviously, it's Oppenheimer, who was all over Time magazine, he was the father of the bomb.
Sure.
Morally, what must that been like when you're the physicist, you're just doing the putting the stuff together? But
right, well, I mean, all of the other physicists involved, say people like Enrico Fermi and even Einstein and Chadwick and all these scientists, were absolute like legends of their own time in their own science world. I don't think they felt conflicted or jealous of Oppenheimer, and it doesn't appear to me that Oppenheimer was seeking that kind of fame and glory in any case. I mean, he retired fairly quickly and over to Princeton, and actually led amazing theoretical physics for the latter part of the 20th century, although he died young. But the point is that, like, I don't think I haven't seen the film, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I don't get the impression that like fame and glory was the goal here.
Well,
in any sort
and in
of
fact
sense.
He spent a lot of his time after creating the bomb warning about its potentials. And I think the movie is probably as much a treatise on the McCarthy era as it is on the achievements, if that's what they can describe in the technology. Was it going to happen anyway?
Well, commentators say there's a contradiction in him, because he took pride in the science through to the end of his life, but also made many efforts, for example, through establishing the Atomic Energy Agency. He told Eisenhower that we got to tell people about this and make it a societal discussion. He was so argumentative against the development of the hydrogen bomb that Teller, his colleague, was adamant that had to do. If you want to make a real movie, go and look at Teller, not Oppenheimer. So he basically got chastised. He got his security clearance revoked, and in a sense, actually, many might have seen that as the tragic end of this. In my view, I don't think he felt tragic. I think he was always interested in science. He was interested, as we know, in the humanities.
He ended out his life. It's not in the movie, but he ended out his life, I suppose, in solitude on this remote US island. But can we separate his technical accomplishments, his scientific accomplishments, from the product that he created. Again, going back to that, the potential destroyer of worlds.
Well, let's be clear here, and this is coming on here. I read a little bit about this. Like he and all his colleagues were fully aware of the consequences. Mm. Actually, Carl Sagan wrote in his book *The Demon-Haunted World* about this and said scientists have to take responsibility for what they do. And if anything, what we can take out of this is that we can't come along and ultimately say Oppenheimer was a good guy or a bad guy. He knew what he was doing when he was doing it. He knew he'd kill people. He then went on maybe for some redemption to try and say, look, let's stop this. Let's moderate it. Let's temper it. But if there's a kind of a human moral from it, it's that, society needs to be more involved when science is given extraordinary power.
What came after in terms of how nuclear bombs, atomic bombs were, progressed, for want of a better phrase, after that? Like, the destruction that you saw, and it has such, watching it, you just think of what's happening in Ukraine and elsewhere.
We're living
with
it right now.
We're living with that risk.
I checked, there are 13,000 nuclear weapons, and each one, the smallest, is five times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. We have enough power to detonate in the region of 100,000 to half a million Hiroshima bombs on the planet today. And the question is, who's managing that? And it's scientists advising politicians. How much do each of us know about it? Not an awful lot, actually, And these are the sort of things I think that Carl Sagan was saying as cautionary tales, is that, actually, even during the USSR, USA, there was kind of rules of engagement, as you point out. These days, it's more precarious, isn't it? Who owns them? Who's managing them?
I think that's why many people are coming out of that movie quite staggered, because the enormity of it. In terms of, how will history, do you think, remember? And obviously, Christopher Nolan has brought it to an extraordinary, a 3-hour movie. You don't even notice the 3 hours passing. But how do you think history will judge him and the work that he and his colleagues did?
Well, actually, he was nominated for Nobel Prize 3 times. His physics was extraordinary. And in the fullness of time, that will come out. But there will always have to be, a case that he would have a question to answer, because he was involved knowingly in one of the most terrifying moments, I think, in human history in terms of warfare, and one that actually still has to play out. So the consequences of his actions, they have informed things like the International Atomic Agency. So, we are trying to learn lessons. We are trying to be, as proper as a society about this. But there's no doubt that he will have to always carry responsibility for what he did, because he did it knowingly. It wasn't some abstract scientist who didn't realise what he did until it happened. He knew what he was doing. Yeah. But he did try to address it later in life in quite pragmatic and maybe reasonably successful terms, given all circumstances available.
Yeah, based, I think, on the film The American Prometheus. It is absolutely fascinating. But for joining us, just to go through all of that, the Oppenheimer, the physicist, Kevin Nolan, physics lecturer at TU Dublin, thank you for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.